Hello, and welcome to the fourth podcast for the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. This is Daryl War, of course, and I wanted to express to you, you probably were wondering at the beginning of the other podcast, or the first one, if you hadn't seen the profile I had at the fanfiction site, I had used Detta as an alternate name that represented something, and it's probably still there. You can just go look it up, but I had represented that name to do fan fiction because I felt like it wasn't quite my work. But then when I saw how engrossed I got in this project, I thought, okay, this is mine. I've just got to put my original pen name on it and just go with it. I've lost 20 pounds from lack of interest in food. I have lost almost a month of sleep between now and the beginning of October. And if you're worried about that, don't contact me and tell me, get some sleep, eat some food. Really, I think in my theorizing of this, I really need the positive feedback. I really need to know that somebody's enjoying this. I think that is really going to be the key and the crux of getting me to finally sleep. It's a theory. I think it's an accurate theory. So if you really care about that and me not driving my spouse crazy, then just do it. You know, it shouldn't be too hard. That's what I'm trying to teach you guys anyway. So just give me a little positive feedback. All right. So let's look at the what I've written for this intro. Now, I'm not sure how brief I can make this intro, because this episode is where the story finally seems to stop skipping so much and really take off for its own adventure. So this is probably going to be a long one, and the podcast is probably going to be really long, but I mean, it's so much fun. There's not going to be a whole lot of teaching and whatever. It's going to be so much fun, really. This episode, it's like taking a jet ski filled with lit fireworks and crashing it into the bottom of Widow's Hill for a dazzling display of colorful attributes. Really. And yes, though fun, it's been serious hard work. Now, I'm not generally a fan fiction writer at all. I know there was a time where somebody was asking me, oh, you're leaving the fan fiction world? And it's like, I don't do fan fiction normally. I just wanted to see this place worked out, like, badly. And if you listen to my other podcast and were able to endure all my weirdness, you know why. You know, you want to see this place nice. You want to see these characters working together. You just, for some reason, there's got to be another way. There's just got to be. It would just be so wonderful to see, you know, just to see them all somewhat content, but still kind of spooky. Still kind of Addams Family, Munsters, Clue, Ghost and Mrs. Muir, all that beautiful stuff, you know. Wouldn't it be great? And that's what I'm trying to do here. And if anybody else has already done it, hey, let me know. It'd be great. I'd love to see it. But I can feel the frustration of many when a special favorite actor, character, whatever, gets completely maligned, and you just grab that pen and say, oh, no, you don't. However, it is hard to feel too weird taking a show that used storylines from so many other previous storylines and making it your own. As you all may know, Dark Shadows borrowed from many different gothic books of old. So, that being said, I do want to kind of speed read through, or I won't say what the storylines were, but I'll just say the books. So, Jane Eyre, that was one that I remember where, in an interview, when Dan Curtis was mentioning this to somebody else who was helping him get the project started of Dark Shadows, he described a story, and the person said, that sounds like Jane Eyre. And I guess Curtis said, what's Jane Eyre? And I was like, whoa, that tripped me out. The Count of Monte Cristo by Alexander Dumas. The Crucible by Arthur Miller. The Cask of Amontillado, obviously by Edgar Allan Poe. Frankenstein by Mary Shelley. Edgar Allan Poe, The Premature Burial, which in my version we skip. It's just nasty. And I have read a lot of Poe, so, you know. The Turn of the Screw by Henry James. The Telltale Heart by Edgar Allan Poe. Whoa, okay. Nicholas Nickleby by Charles Dickens. Of course, The Picture of Dorian Gray by Oscar Wilde. And I'm gonna stop there because that's pretty much as far as I'm likely gonna go with this series. I think that's why this new combination makes more sense to me now than when I started. Also, by the way, If you're wondering with what Wadsworth was talking about with Victoria Winter's relationship to Elizabeth Stoddard in episode 2, this was inspired by what some of the final intentions were for the show. Also, this is a major treat if you can still find it online. There's this tiny little video, I can't find it now, but it's of Joan Bennett, trying not to laugh from what I saw, saying that she was talking to us as Elizabeth Stoddard, and then she said, "Yes, Victoria Winters is my daughter." And then you can hear some very light chuckling from someone off screen. If anyone can find this video for me again, I'd love it. So that really helped me with my format for this story. If you care, we're going to find out more about that. And I really love how it's planned out and who I've picked for the father. At least the old classic movie actor who will represent him. I think he matches our Aunt Elizabeth entirely. Heaven knows she deserves him. Really. My concept of him is very romantic, I trust. Now, on to the other details. All right. Sam Evans, who is also affectionately known as Pop by his daughter Maggie Evans, is here. Sam is a talented artist who does like his booze. Also, he knew how to make use of his undisguised love for alcohol when Maggie was overcoming the trauma of her kidnapping. Sam Evans and I am not really sure right now. I think it was the sheriff. It might have been Dr. Woodard. I'm pretty sure it was Sheriff Patterson. Anyway, Sam Evans and presumably Sheriff Patterson decided to make a scene at the local tavern. Everybody knows that's the Blue Whale. Where Sam would have a few drinks, but act like he'd had a whole keg or something. Then he plays the drunken part and goes on that Maggie would remember the identity of her kidnapper, or that she already knew the identity of her kidnapper, to which the two involved in the kidnapping find out and shake in their collective coats. Of course, Sam's companion plays his role by pretending to try and shush him so he doesn't spill the beans. I dug that Sam was able to play that out. To me, it showed recognizing your flaws and using them to your own advantage. Also, in the original Dark Shadows program, Sam Evans helps Barnabas with a painting, and it pretty much plays out as in my story, minus the deja vu and vague recognition of the thing between the two men. Thing is, when Angelique slash Cassandra gets her dose of Dorian Gray voodoo, she does find Sam and demand he stop his work. When he says he can't, she does something that's so nasty to him that honestly, I ain't even going there. Really. Of course, that and his eventual death was when I grabbed my pen and said, "Oh no, you don't." As I'm sure has been echoed ad nauseum across the world when it comes to this kind of writing. This episode of mine really took shape and thrust when I finally gave in and watched the television version, as badly clipped as what still exists of it online now, The Ghost and Mrs. Muir. I'd seen the film, but never gave the TV show a chance. Wow. I didn't know what I was in for. I watched all the episodes and then played some Tetris while listening to them and sort of rewatching to make sure I got all the details down. The ghost of a sea captain. And instead of England, as in the film and presumably book, if you can find a copy, the TV version was set in a little township called Schooner Bay in the state of, wait for it, Maine. Ah. Then it was all over. Really, there was no way I couldn't find good use for him. Now, when I've asked for positive feedback for this, maybe a few of you have been shy, but really, if any of you know anyone who loved that show, The Ghost and Mrs. Muir, and I know there are devoted fans whose love has likely fizzled a bit in recent years, I am ready to rekindle it here. So please let them know. In fact, in episode 12, they will be super delighted how dramatic I made that guy. Captain Daniel Craig, he's dynamite. He really lays out the morality play in episode 12. I am positive they will love hearing him dish it out in all his salty dog appeal. I really do. So find those people for me. I'm looking for them. Captain Daniel Gregg is likely a character that has helped this town in my audio drama the most. He was played by Edward Mulhare, who also was a staunch Brit in the old 80s series Knight Rider, if you can believe it. However, as much as I remember liking him in that, I think Captain Greg is where he really has shined for me. Now, you won't hear him in this episode, but you know how in those episodes of The Ghost and Mrs. Muir where you know he's there and Mrs. Muir knows he's there, but no one else does? What I really like about this episode is when Tony and Carolyn meet her, Mrs. Muir, she keeps whispering random stuff under her breath. I thought it logical when I originally wrote the story, but when I listen to it now, I find it hilarious. It's just so funny. Because we know what she's doing, and we get a first-hand glimpse of what that experience is like for everyone else who can't see or hear the captain. I also really like Carolyn and Tony here so much.
Because not only are they dating here, they're also working as a team. And they do some stuff here that, again, is getting the dominoes falling and making things better. With combined help, of course.
Tony Peterson was digging big time on Miss Stoddard. But, of course, Cassandra / Angelique foiled that in the original show. So, what would it be like if that foiling got foiled on its own? And this was the part of the story where my adoration for Tony and Carolyn's romance just sunk its canines into me. Although, I've often visualized them in a first and second base innocence, really. So far. I really think they contrast each other so well. She's light and blonde. He's dark and somewhat olive, if I'm describing that right. I know there is a convention video I've seen where the two actors play out re-meeting, and it was written by Jerry Lacey. Dang. That man just marvels me to no end. Especially when you see him play Reverend Trask with the flies buzzing around. He just pulls it off so well. Of course, the gumshoe just gets me. And I'm sorry, I didn't go to Bogart first for doing his voice. I just went with a deeper intonation. On to the encounter. This is fun. With Cassandra and Barnabas as her painting is about to be scourged. Much of this scene is original. But since the actor who played Wadsworth also played another role, I've hinted perhaps a combination lays in store. I know many people now are very used to blatant displays of comedy, but I just like to slyly hint at these things. Besides, I know later on some of the actors to the Rocky Horror film showed a bit of embarrassment in later years, so a wink's as good as a nod in this case. The scene was so hard to do. When I wrote it, again, it was just kind of logical to make these references. And again, the text does not do it justice. Although I've heard a little bit to the contrary. When I made my attempt to perform this scene, where Cassandra gets her dose of Dorian Gray justice, it almost took 24 hours. I was literally falling on the floor. I just could not do it with the voices one after the other. And I have never been to a public feature of Rocky Horror. Yes, I know. You fans out there, go ahead and say it about me, whatever. Either way, I'm more into the first half of the film. The rest just seems to bore me. Still, I never, ever thought I'd ever have to sing that song. My original recordings just had clips from the film. I realized at this point, since Wadsworth is down in the cellar or dungeon or wherever the lab or Barnabas's coffin was, I knew I'd have to get that echo down. It was really hard. It really was. I was likely awake for far too long. So yes, fun. But I felt like I was going to die laughing before I could get it done. I mean, really, you guys. Really, it was hard. Also, if anyone knows the Dark Shadows blooper reel, or just the scene, remember when Cassandra mentions the portrait is missing and Jonathan Frid kind of flubs the line in this way where he says, "Oh, how fortunate, how unfortunate," and then just lets it go? Well, I decided in my revision to let Barnabas have that flub, in all confidence, and I dispensed with the attempt to correct it. Yeah, you just gotta love it. The tension is so much better now with Wadsworth down in the cellar singing his heart out while Barnabas is even more confident in this scheme. And Cassandra is just plain weirded out and having trouble doing her doe-eyed expression of pretending everything's okay. Really, it's so funny. So funny. However, after doing that, you do realize with this rewrite, it may be, no promises, but it may be possible to add the Time Warp song. Right? Right? I mean, Barnabas has to get to 1897, right? You guys with me on this here? To find our hirsute Quentin? Yes? I've been doing more recording and editing and reading aloud than writing these days, but if you enjoy this show and you want that Time Warp song, I've already got the karaoke version, so I'm ready for this, do, please, contact me. Give me what you laughed at or any highlight you liked, and I will do my best to get that scene to you. I really will, if you want it. With the way the song plays out, I really have good ideas of who will be singing which parts, and what will happen in the end. Obviously, Barnabas is going to think they're all nuts, and say so at the wrong moment. So, with that said, if you really want to hear it, if you think that I've done the caricature well enough that I will be able to perform it, get a pencil, or type it down. xoisctehe@hotmail.com. No promises, but I will do my best if I keep on getting the good news. Also, I do try to get the characters down, but like most of you, that black wig on Cassandra was just something else. So, I did give Barnabas a funny line that doesn't really fit him, but I just can't let it go. Maybe he learned it from Maggie or something, but who cares? It's just too good to let go when Cassandra shuffles out the door in horror. I also feel like I might have got slightly closer to doing a better impression of him while he snarls at her. You be the judge. I'm going to keep working on that. Anyway, I'm sorry that this took so long, but really, when it comes down to brass tacks, this episode 4 is where my story truly begins. It really is. Everything else is catch-up time. This is where it starts. This is where it's good. And for any of those fans out there wondering who he's going to pick, by this point it should be really obvious. Keep coming. It's been hard work, but we're going to find out who that girl was. We're really going to find out who that girl was. And I think she's going to be very pleased that we cared enough to find out who she is. Enjoy. The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. Episode 4. Captain Greg Gets Bent.
Good evening, and welcome once again to the Pit of Ultimate Darkness. Or rather, as we like to say backstage, the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. I am your host, Sir Simon Milligan.
Yeah!
Oh, my. Well, thank you. I blush at your patronage. Tonight, we enter the encapsulated subconscious of the human mind. Oh, wait a minute. Perhaps not. Didn't the dream curse come and go? I must look into the skull, as a fortune teller does her crystal ball.
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again. If you need help, hang up and then dial your operator.
Ugh. Well, that got me nowhere. I must now call upon my handy, well-beloved of Satan, and trusty sidekick, manservant Hecubus! Good evening, Master. I am here to serve you. And Santa!
Say what? Whoops! Just a bit of metathesis here. Pardon me. There, all better now. Hecubus, I'm wondering that you recall if the dream curse has come and gone yet in our Collinsport radio drama.
I believe it has, Master. In fact, I believe we are wafting into the realms of art.
Art? Who?
Oh, no, Master. Art as in drawing, painting, the visual arts, as in the picture of Dorian Gray.
Hecubus! You're giving away where we've ripped off our plot lines. Evil.
Evil! Still evil after all these years! Ladies and gentlemen, Hecubus the Evil One!
Now, on with the show. We need a volunteer. You!
Me?
Do you dare come to the pitiful darkness?
Yeah, sure. Why not? Business is slow.
Rise and approach. And what is your name?
My name is Tony Peterson.
Made you say it.
Made me say what?
We made you say my name is.
All right, fine.
Tony Peterson, I am about to rob you of your free will. Does this frighten you?
Hardly.
What?
I've had that done on a number of occasions recently. A woman with a lighter, my lighter, kept staring at me in the garden and possessing my thoughts. If it's all the same to you, I'd rather you didn't. It's been seriously irritating.
Oh, well then. Then how about I reassert your free will?
Sounds good to me.
You are a gumshoe prominent lawyer of Collinsport with all your free will intact.
You are what he said.
Aren't you going to hypnotize me first?
We just did. Hecubus, please entrance him with the sleep of ages.
What's that for?
Just a little validation, like having your parking ticket stamped.
Oh. Okay.
Repeat after me. B.
B.
Ow.
O.
Pra.
Pra.
Blem.
Blem.
Faster. B. O.
B. O. Pra.
Blem.
B.O. Problem.
Faster! And page it overhead!
B.O. Problem. Hey, everybody, do I have a B.O. problem here? Heckler.
Yeah, you sure do!
You know what? I have a date. I'm leaving.
Do so freely! In fact, I'm sure you pee freely!
And now, we return you to Collinsport, in which we join Tony Peterson and Carolyn Stoddard on their date, already in progress.
I'm glad you accepted my invitation to a long drive and dinner. I've been dying to get away from Collinsport for ages.
Ah, me too, Tony. What's the name of this place we're going?
Nori's Lobster House. Quiet, quaint, and a far cry from our usual spots at home.
No, I remember Nori's. But where's the restaurant? The city it's in.
Oh my, not a city at all. Not even a town. It's a township called Schooner Bay.
Township? Really? Actually, Schooner Bay sounds familiar. I think I have a great aunt that lives there.
Oh?
Yes, a schoolmistress, on my father's side. I'd love to meet her, in fact.
You haven't met her?
Oh, no. Well, I didn't try. Much mention of my father's side was distracted away when I was a child. But I remember hearing about her from a chum in high school very briefly.
Maybe we'll look her up while we're there.
Well, now that I think it over, I'm not sure if I'm really related to her. The thing is, she lives in Maine, and her last name is Stoddard, and I just thought, you know, could be.
Dang. Wish I could make a phone call. I have connections and might be able to find out something.
You could? That would be marvelous.
Milligan.
Meanwhile, Barnabas, having spoken with Professor Stokes over a slice of cheese and a totally unsweetened biscuit, decides the portrait of Angelique that Roger continues to covet
throughout all this time, is to be captured from Collinwood and vandalized with a certain complexity.
Yes, Hecubus. Thanks for sacrificing my shrine hostage to this torment. Now we have to suffer seeing it constantly changing hands.
However, I suppose it's an integral part of the story. This indeed is the painting Roger has become enamored with during his oh-so-brief marriage to Cassandra. Both our lovely Angelique and Cassandra, as we all know, are the same person. Barnabas believes this picture is the key to Cassandra's resurrection.
Here you are, sir. It was a fairly simple absconding, and most deservedly, I'm sure. You are nothing, if not a wonder, Wadsworth. A most terrifying beauty lies herein, as I look at her. Agreed, sir. Some dark entity does lurk in the features of this specimen. Of course, we both know why, sir. Tell me, how do you manage it? Well, there is the usual exchange of delivery items betwixt here and Collinwood. I transfer the dairy to Mrs. Johnson, and she hands over the eggs, so we have daily interaction that way. You see, the delivery men are afraid to brave the wilds of the estate, so we arrange the solution to their dilemma. Truly, it makes the telephone seem obsolete. Then call me not a wonder, sir. It is the wonders of Providence. However, while I was there, I wandered about to Mr. Roger Collins' study, where the portrait was hanging above his desk, and there he found me. Oh, my! Was he acerbic? Somewhat. But then he was most appreciative, as I was able to relocate a volume of Dale Carnegie's he seems to continually misplace. Oh, yes. How to stop worrying and start living? The very one, sir. How did you know? I lent it to him, actually. Truth be told, I left it on his desk in hopes he'd venture its pages. Not a bad idea, sir. Thank you, my good man. I take it you're finally catching on to my method of handling things. Well, since the death of Dr. Lang and the disappearance of Adam, I think I've finally had enough of all the pathetic barbarism we've been dealing with. Yes, that wasn't exactly the best way of seeing you. Somewhat cured. How one can project a life force into another body is something I'd tried myself, however, and I can't quite see the connection of having two bodies walking around with only one thing propelling them forward. Ah, yes, then perhaps it was your odd solution. Coffee and brandy, sir, I doubt it. I've seen your usage of the laboratory. I think there's something quite different you've been serving me. Why you're so keen on being useful to me is still the mystery often on my mind. There's not to make reply. There's not to reason why. There's but to do and die. Die? Merely quoting, sir, from Alfred Lord Tennyson's Charge of the Light Brigade. Who is that? Was, sir. Oh, my. Dale Carnegie before Tennyson, sir? Apparently you're much better at secreting books for others to read than I am. I suppose. But I've been a bit behind on my reading. No doubt, sir. On that note, there is another quote by Tennyson I'd like to mention. Oh? 'Tis better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. Beautiful. And likely true. How does it fit? It doesn't, sir. Between you, I, and my employment here, it's not a beneficial quotation. I see. Thank you for that. And without further ado, I shall take this painting with me to... Well, no need to tell me, sir. It is better I don't know, than I shan't have to explain it to anyone else. I'll close the door behind you.
Thank you. And now we return you to Carolyn and Tody Peterson in Schooner Bay.
It is quaint.
I agree.
Shall we go in?
Wait, Tony. I just wanted to tell you.
Yes?
Well, to thank you, really. This has been a very pleasant day for me. A walk by the ocean, a beautiful drive along the coast, and...
Well, what was that for?
For everything. My dear, you are one to keep.
And so they are seated, orders taken, and they peruse the various topics of conversational enjoyment. Then Carolyn, more kind-hearted than one might give her credit for, becomes distracted by a woman seated nearby.
Excuse me, ma'am? Excuse me, ma'am?
Oh, would you like the salt from this table?
No, I was just wondering, if I might ask. You seem terribly upset. I was wondering if you'd like to talk about it.
Oh, well, no, I mean, yes. Well, it is a little awkward.
Tony, let's move the table.
What? Toward the wall?
Yes, there's not much on it yet. Just the silverware.
Oh, okay. Heave-ho!
And so they joined their table to their neighbors against the wall. One might be puzzled at this behavior, but good moods being so rare, the two felt ample to share.
Well, that's very kind of you, and so sudden, too.
We've had a lovely day, so we're only too happy to share it. Now, what's the trouble?
Well, my name is Carolyn Muir. We made her say it, too!
Hush, Hecubus!
Carolyn? Why, that's my name, too!
Oh, well, in that case, it'll be just as well you call me what everyone else does. I'm Mrs. Muir.
Hello, Mrs. Muir. I'm Tony Peterson.
And you know my name? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge!
Definitely. Well, the crux of the matter is that I have an old painting in my home, which I'm renting. That's the house, not the painting. And my children were playing around by it, and, well, it's got a stain on it now. And it's dirty and old as it is, and needs to be cleaned and likely a little...
refurbished?
Yes. And though I've lived here some time, I don't know anyone who could do that kind of work on such an old painting. But it has to be done. As, well, a friend of mine has prominently put it.
A friend?
In so many words.
Oh. Well.
This part of the conversation is interrupted by a request for a drink and a meal order for Mrs. Muir. I shall dispense with these trivialities and return you to the Evans Cottage.
Huh? Oh, Mr. Collins. My, what a surprise to find you out at this hour.
Oh?
The sun is still out, you know.
Oh, yes. Well, my business has allowed me a bit more leisure time to devote to certain pursuits, particularly this one.
Shifting of painting. My goodness. Carried that, did you? Usually you hire someone to do all that. So many changes.
I am somewhat more fit than I have been. Now, if you take a look here...
What a wicked-looking woman. And familiar somehow. Attractive, but still.
Yes, I entirely concur, but...
You digress, of course. Here, just plop it on the easel. Now, what are you bringing me this for?
I want you to age it.
Age it? This? This is hardly a new painting. It must be over 100 years old already. If you want, I could distress the frame with sandpaper and then slap some peanut butter and jelly over the picture and wipe it with tack cloth. But I doubt that will do much. Why do you want this done?
This is a job to be done with no questions. I don't want you to distress the portrait itself, just the subject in the painting, so that she ages older and older until she is well over 100 years old, maybe 2. And I'd like you to begin at precisely 10:15 p.m., and use the stiffest bristles you can manage.
But, Mr. Collins, this is such gorgeous workmanship. How about I just buy it off you for $50?
How about I pay you $500 to do what I asked?
Are you serious?
Do I look like I'm jesting?
You could be playing deadpan.
Mr. Evans, I would like the job done by you. With your skill, I am sure it can be accomplished to grand perfection. I say, you appear to have gotten lost in thought.
Hmm? I have an odd feeling.
Yes?
Like I've seen her before.
Oh, my. Not recently, have you?
No.
But it seems so long ago. So very long that it would surpass my own lifespan. Her face is familiar to you?
No. Not simply her face. The hair. The clothes. Everything.
Mr. Evans, you are looking a little
vengeful? I believe I may feel somehow wronged by this image. Mr. Collins, I'll do it.
With the harshest of brushes?
Of course.
At 10:15 p.m. precisely.
Yes. In fact, I'll just cover this up and put an alarm on here.
Good idea. If you continue to stare at it, you look like you may become too eager.
I believe you're right. What could be coming over me, I can't say. But I'm sure it'll make the work go faster.
I understand. There are cases of familiarity that can charge certain emotions. Déjà vu has that effect on...
Mr. Collins, now you look a little lost.
You know, Mr. Evans, there's something more familiar to me about you as well. I can't place it yet.
I suppose it's only... a fluke? Likely. Not surprised. Déjà vu. Funny.
I believe it literally means already seen.
Yes. French, isn't it?
Psh! That in itself is giving me déjà vu. Is it? I suppose we can only continue to wonder on that score.
With this part of Barnabas Collins' errand out of the way, we return you to Schooner Bay.
Well, here we are. Home sweet home. Mrs. Muir, hello? Oh, Martha! These are two people I met at Norrie's. This is Carolyn Stoddard and Tony Peterson. This is my housekeeper and good friend, Martha.
The three exchanged introductory hellos.
They came out to Norrie's all the way from Collinsport.
Collinsport? My, what a long drive! I've heard of peculiar goings-ons thereabouts.
I hate to be a spreader of superstition, but anything you may have heard is likely fairly close to true. With a grain of salt, ma'am.
Well, perhaps a quarter teaspoon of salt, to be more accurate.
Really?
It's all the stormy weather. Puts people into a flight of fancy.
You think you've got stormy weather? We do as well, but it comes and goes so quickly sometimes. That flash and crash, likely to make a drizzle and go out in 2 minutes.
Probably all heads over to us.
Could be. I always wondered if any place nearby had prior warnings.
Well, Martha, I wanted to show them the painting of the captain. They know someone who may be able to clean and refurbish it.
Oh, well, in that case, have at it. I'll make some coffee to prepare you for the long journey. It will be nice to have a reprieve from the captain a while.
Martha, are the children in bed?
Oh, yes, all tucked in and sleeping like angels. We have the evening to ourselves.
Good work, Martha. Well, let's move into the parlor here, and you can look over the painting.
Yes, I can trust them. Stop worrying.
Why would I be worried?
Well, oh well. It is a little hard to clean, I'm sure.
Well, perhaps I was worried.
Steps into another room. Click of lamp.
Here is the painting.
Captain Gregg. He built this house and named it Gull Cottage. And, of course, the bits of mustard off to the side.
Oh, my. Very grand. Forbidding. But with a certain charm. Well, minus the condiments, of course.
Yes, quite an admirable-looking seaman.
Yes, see? Told you we could trust them.
Hmm? Mrs. Mira?
You do have the habit of muttering. Oh, I do apologize. I tend to make mental notes in a verbal manner. I'm a writer. Are you very impressed with the portrait?
Oh, yes.
It's quite a change from the paintings of ancestors we have at Collinwood. With those paintings, it seems to be mainly about wealth and stature, rather than showing what they spent their time doing. They're all so stuffy, barely a hint of a smile. But then Tony explains that's a newer expectation in portraiture.
Oh, my, yes. Have you seen a set of the president's portraits all lined up? I believe there was this idea.
Yes, I'm getting to that.
That if one smiled, it wasn't dignified. But nowadays, the idea has changed.
Yes, it has. A bit of Hollywood taking over. A smiling face is so much more inviting, I suppose. Though I prefer honesty in expression, however it forms.
Here is the coffee. So, are you going to leave a nice empty space over the mantel?
Oh, not for too long, Martha.
Oh, I was hoping it would be a while. I'd feel a richer sense of serenity if it were...
She does speak her mind, doesn't she?
Like I said. Martha is not only a housekeeper, but a friend. Is the painting set with a basic hanging in the back?
Oh, yes. If you can lift it and place it in your car, I'm sure it will be simple enough, and...
Yes, I know.
We'll put it in paper and cloth to see it's not damaged. And we leave them to have their coffee and transport the painting in peace. We now take you to the main house of Collinwood, where Elizabeth Stoddard is in the drawing-room, wondering over a particular postcard as Roger walks in.
Sound of crackling fire, seat being taken. Liz, you seem a bit concerned over that. Any worries?
Well, it's nice to hear you care.
Oh, of course. I've been feeling a great deal better lately. Just going over some legal matters. But what have you got there?
A postcard. From Victoria.
Ah, and how is our old governess doing?
A shaky hand wrote this, I'm afraid. Postmark says Washington State, but I can't make out the city.
Likely it went to go and investigate the Space Needle in Seattle. I hear that's quite a structure for fools without fear.
Roger, must you always have something acidic to add?
Of course, you know me.
To be sure I do. At least you're calmer these days. Anyway, I do wish this fellow she finally picked out had a sure name. It doesn't surprise me she didn't tack it onto her own yet. The paperwork for their marriage was so hazy.
Ah, well, they tried. And people take it as read they're married as things are. To many of us, emblems and watermarks make a document. But the ceremony still holds higher importance to most people. If only I had been so wise to take my marriage vows as simply, then I wouldn't have to bother looking over the contractual mess of it.
Sorry to hear that, Roger. I did warn you not to marry her.
I know it. But I'll see how binding it all is. Anyway, what does Victoria write?
Well, the most recent place they stayed had a murder investigation going on, but they've been able to leave and move ahead.
Heh, that doesn't sound like a good start at getting away from all the bizarre turmoil of this place. Maybe she took some of it with her.
I wouldn't think so. She was so happy when they left.
So you said. I'm glad to hear it. Well, perhaps it was only a stroke of bad luck. If they're still on the road, there's hope for them yet.
Thank you, Roger.
You're welcome, sister.
Little does Roger realize that his missing lady, that I covet so highly, has been neglecting him while snooping through windows at her old abode. I suppose she doesn't want to put in an appearance until she discovers why she's been summoned elsewhere. Next, we return to the old house, where not a so blood-sucking anachronism of a man awaits a visitor as he has a courteous discussion with the dependable Wadsworth.
I must thank you for conveying that message to Cassandra for me. Oh, it took a bit of driving to find her, but I was sure a certain mystic beautician in Boston would have patched up the works of our heroic Mrs. Johnson. A dream curse can only go so far. Really.
Did you tell my cousin Roger where she was?
I suggested it. She does seem to have the kind of vanity that gave him no misgivings about the idea. You always make me want to raise your salary. Ah, there is no need of that quite yet. I appreciate the effort, and after all of my own history, it's very nice to have such a large place to be sequestered. I do welcome the leeway you've bestowed, and the solitude. Of course, you've earned it. If you don't mind, sir, I believe I shall venture down to the cellar and continue with my preserves. Oh, very good, Wadsworth. You give yourself all the leisure time you want tonight. I shall, and I do anticipate we'll both be needing a bit of privacy. Yes, I am expecting someone at this very minute. Shall I answer? No, you do best to make your way down to your preserves. I shall answer it. Good evening, sir. And Wadsworth? Yes, sir. Don't be hindered to keep quiet. A few rattling chains would certainly add to the atmosphere this evening. Very good, sir. Please come in, Miss...
Mrs. Roger Collins.
Oh, dear. I'm sorry. I keep forgetting. Well, what kept you? Oh, dear. Is that a cat scratch at your arm?
No, it's from a bladed glove. Oh, never mind.
How do you do? I see you've met my faithful handyman. He's just a little brought down, because when you knocked, he thought you were the Candyman.
Oh, dear. Perhaps you have company and this is the wrong time.
Oh, no, hardly.
Don't get strung out by the way I look. Don't judge a book by its cover.
What was that?
Oh, just one of the ghosts around here. You do know we have a plentiful variety of ghosts in Collinwood, yes?
No, I didn't. Well,
I'm not much of a man by the light of day, but by night I'm one hell of a lover.
I haven't seen you around Collinwood lately. I thought perhaps you were on a vacation.
Let me show you around, maybe play you a sound. You look like you're both pretty groovy.
I am... No. I just decided to go to Boston for some shopping.
Without telling anyone. That's peculiar, isn't it?
Is it? Well, actually, no one even knows I've come back from that trip.
Or went on it.
I had an idea. You had a portrait my husband seems to have misplaced.
Misplaced? You must have snuck over there and peeped in a window to get that information.
Perhaps I did. I believe that portrait is missing.
How fortunate. Will you have a brandy? As you can see, I am having one.
Why not? It has been a bit drafty in this
house coat.
Chilly night air.
Of course. Answer glass. I know you're used to a much warmer climate.
I'm not a native of Maine, all right?
Well, do I look of Passamaquoddy lineage to you?
Passama what?
Have your brandy.
Well, you got caught with a flat. Well, how about that? Well, babies, don't you panic. By the light of the night, it'll all seem all right. I'll get you a satanic mechanic.
You still haven't mentioned why you wanted me here.
Well, it is 10:13 p.m., and all is well.
Do you normally shout out the time?
Not normally, but then, here we are, with not another soul about.
I'm just a sweet transvestite from Transsexual.
Good brandy. I must say I'm rather tired of sherry.
I do hope so. You see, I think tired is a good word for how you will feel in 5, 4, 3, 2.
What are you?
1.
Oh! Meanwhile, at the Evans cottage, where Sam has become possessed of a previous life as André Dupré.
Despicable monster! I remember now. It's straight from the underworld. I hate you and what you did to my daughter, you conniving, wrathful underside of a beast! Now you are 60, and with this stroke I'm moving you on to 80!
And back at the old house. That's smarts!
It darn well ought to. You've interfered with my family and love life far too long.
My hand! It's wrinkled and gnarled!
Well, here's a mirror if you would like to powder your nose.
My face! What is in that pot's cold cream?
Never mind. You shall either repent what you've done or wither away back to the bubbling sulfur of hell.
I'm allergic to sulfites!
Then stop drinking wine!
I know what you've done, and I will find who is responsible.
What? No pretending you aren't Angelique?
Who?
Oh, fine! I'll open the door for you and your miserable fro!
Ah! And now we return you to the Evans Cottage, not to be confused with Goal Cottage. Well, maybe kind of.
Oh, etre foutu, and sacre merde! Darn pestering folks, who could that be?
That weather did follow us here.
It did indeed. Huh? Carolyn? Mr. Peterson? That's me! What are you doing here?
Oh, Mr. Evans, please let us in. I'm afraid it'll rain any minute.
Oh. Of course. Come right in. Shall I perk some coffee? Oh, we've already had quite a bit in Schooner Bay. Schooner Bay?
Oh, yes, Mr. Evans. We were just there, and there was this very kind woman who needed a painting cleaned and refurbished, and we just thought of you, naturally.
Well, I'm already working on something. In fact, it's a bit in a particular schedule for right now. I mean...
Oh, I knew you'd be just the man for the job. Let's bring this in.
Oh, honestly, Miss Stoddard, I can't work on this right now. You mentioned something about coffee? I thought you didn't want...
Oh, yes, Mr. Evans. Please perk some coffee up. Can you make it strong?
Well, it's about the only way I can make it.
Good thinking, Tony.
Anything for you, Miss Stoddard.
Oh, Tony, you are so formal.
I noticed he became that way when things weren't going how he expected.
Yes, there's something going on here. Let's see what...
What is it? Good God!
No kidding. That looks like Uncle Roger's wife.
And then some. But she's older and...
Coming well unglued, I think.
We need to hide this before...
Before he fixes it to what she looks like now?
Exactly.
Okay, let's get to it. Switch the portraits.
Right behind you. All right, here's the coffee. Hey, what the heck? And essentially, as our listeners may easily have discerned, Carolyn and Tony are leaving with the painting. Well,
ma bonte.
I might as well go back to... What the hell is this painting?
Due respect to The Kids in the Hall, Clue, 1980s film, Rocky Horror Picture Show film, The Ghost and Mrs. Muir, 1960s TV show, and of course, Dark Shadows, 1960s TV show.